It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. Got a great panel for you. Sam Abul-Samid, Georgia Dow, and my old buddy Patrick Norton. We'll talk about Nobus, why the NSA says nobody but us is all that matters. A face recognition company that will end privacy as we know it. And why SIM swapping attacks are so common. It's all coming up next on TWiT. This Week in Tech comes to you from the TWiT LastPass studios. You're focused on security, but are your employees? LastPass can ensure they are by making access and authentication seamless. Visit LastPass.com/TWiT to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 754, recorded Sunday, January 19th, 2020. I dream of Wiki. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Capterra. Find the right tools to make an informed software decision for your business. Visit Capterra's free website at capterra.com/TWiT. And by ExpressVPN. Protect your online privacy with one click. It's that easy. For 3 extra months free with a 1-year package, go to expressvpn.com/twit. And by Worldwide Technology. Worldwide Technology's Advanced Technology Center is like no other testing and research lab with more than $500 million of equipment, including solutions from key partners like NVIDIA. And it's virtual, so you can access it 24/7. To learn more and get insights into all that it offers, go to wwt.com/twit. And by IT Pro TV. IT Pro TV provides IT training that's effective and entertaining with access to virtual labs and practice tests. Visit itpro.tv/twit for an additional 30% off for the lifetime of your active subscription. Use code TWIT30 at checkout. It's time for TWiT, the show. Oh, my God. Who's that? If you're watching the video, apparently some a Mexican wrestler who is a 49ers fan has snuck into the studio. Apparently, there is a hand egg game later in the day. So I am dressed in the accoutrement of the hand egg fanatic. It's time for the show where we talk about the latest tech news. Joining me, Mr. Patrick Norton, host of This Week at Computer Hardware, my longtime... Look how good he looks. Are you using some sort of...
It's so...
What are you... Is it like a filter? You're
keeping your hair cut... It is the glow of being on camera with Pollo de Oro, the luchador of Petaluma.
Did you just call me a golden chicken?
Yes. What else? It was that or the golden egg or the golden.
I'm wearing 49ers gear.
Or the golden develop.
The golden. I don't know. The golden child. Patrick Norton, avxl.com. Great to see you.
Yeah.
Welcome to the show. Did you go to CES? I think you did.
I did.
I
went
for
to
you.
CES. I actually saw something cool.
You texted me.
I said, you're here? What are you doing here? Is everything okay?
I said, for my sins, I am back after 8 years. But I had a good time. We'll talk about that a little bit. Hang in there. Also with me, Sam Abul-Samid. He is my car guy. I like to have a car guy. I like that. Principal analyst at Navigant Research. He's also the host of the Wheel Bearings podcast. He joins the radio show every Sunday to talk about automobiles. He's in Detroit, where it does not look like that.
No, not this time of year.
That's a summertime shot. I'm great, Sam. Welcome. It's good to have you. And all the way from beautiful Toronto, where the sun is shining, the birds are singing, and the temperature has fallen to a subarctic. How cold is it, Georgia Dow?
Well, I'm in Montreal. It's pretty cold.
What am I saying, Toronto? You're in Montreal.
It's a Canadian place. That's fine.
They're all the same.
It's all around the same area.
No, they are not.
Vancouver, Montreal, St. John's. What's the difference?
Actually, Canada is very diverse, isn't it? It's very diverse.
Yeah. We have the French connection here, so that makes it a little different.
Lisa and I have decided that we are going to take the Via Cross Canada train.
Ooh.
maybe not next year, but the year after. And I think we have to end up in Montreal.
You really do. We'll take you out. There's some beautiful places to go in Montreal.
It'll be you and Renee, and it'll be so much fun.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, great to have all three of you. You, Georgia, did not go to CES.
I did not go to CES. I was here. I got to see all of the most interesting things through the internet, but that was it.
Well, that's my sense of it. And Patrick, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's kind of like the difference between going to a football game in person, which you do for the atmosphere, but it's very difficult to tell what's going on in the field, and watching it on TV where you see all the details. Honestly, CES is best covered from afar.
Yeah, I do miss the momentum of CES.
Maybe.
Though. There's something fun about it.
Yeah, just like there's something fun about sitting in the stands and trying to make out what those 22 men are doing down there on the field. Is there a football amongst them? I don't know. Patrick, do you go every year now?
This was my 22nd or 23rd. it depends. It depends on what you're doing, right? I actually have you know, if it depends on, you know, if you're okay. One, there was a lot less. It seemed to be a lot less coverage where teams, either huge media teams, ascended to do 123 stories in the first two or three days. But it's still. It's becoming less important to hard tech, more important to general news. But it's interesting, right? Because it's still in so many ways like homecoming, because so many people you know in the various industries that show up are there, or people you know in, you know, whether they are writers or make video or whatever else they do. I saw two or three things that were I wouldn't have seen if I hadn't been at CES.
Yeah.
In terms of television, there was like nothing new. In terms of audio, like there was actually the least number of audio vendors I've ever seen, which I think means audio has finally given up completely on CES. It wasn't too bad last year. This year it was nothing. The Delta keynote still fascinates me.
Delta. This was Delta Airlines, the first time a major air carrier had presented at CES. I didn't see the keynote, but I did see they had exoskeletons where you could lift luggage, and they had a signboard that was different depending on who was looking at it. What did they do at the keynote that baffled you?
Oh, I avoid, if I don't have to be at press days, I don't go anymore sitting in 2 hours, I've sat in 2 hours to go see something and found out they actually didn't reveal a new product. And if I don't have to do that, I don't. Actually, the thing that saw me that blew me away was Mojo Vision's prototype. I actually got the hands-on demo with the contact lens with the embedded display.
Did they put it in your eye?
Which, no, they are not to that point yet. But they literally had, so you could view it, the demo. It was basically like a contact lens on a stick, and that allows you to see. Interface.
Why would you want a contact lens on a stick? This does not sound.
Well, there's a display embedded in the contact lens.
Okay.
And the idea is, and it's interesting.
Oh, you mean like a Roku built into the contact lens?
It's something more basic information.
Okay.
Like, imagine you're sitting there. They had an interface demo where you could actually interact with the interface, where you would sort of look out to the, you know, you would look up sort of to the edge of your vision, and that would activate a very simple, very subtle drop down menu where you could, you know, sort of pause audio or check the weather or get a discrete piece of information.
Look at the size of that contact lens. It's got to cover your whole eyeball.
Well, it's in the early days. Yeah,
it is.
But
it's early days.
What's fascinating, about this, right, is part of what they're motivated about is this embedded display on this is incredibly tiny, doesn't disrupt your vision, and they did an amazing demo where you were seeing it doing edge detection, and it gave you the equivalent of a form of night vision that could be dropped onto an eyeball. And that for, you know, and there are people inside of the company that are motivated because of relationships they have in their personal lives. And it was fascinating because they were showing sort of medical uses for it that will help them. And they've got a partnership with the FDA to help move this through testing. And it was really fascinating because, you know, looking up in the corner and pulling this very simple menu down, they're not trying to.
So the gesture,
what was the line?
The gesture is where your eyeball is.
Their goal, the demo I had was using an HTC Vive, right, as they kind of work out the
interface.
Okay,
that's fair.
Which was actually
you're
really
wearing
well
a visor, but it would look the same as that. So it's the difference in the Vive is there's a camera looking your eyeball. There wouldn't be with a contact lens.
What But what they're saying, essentially what my understanding is, there is a display that faces your eyeball and a camera that faces out. And what they will do is they will be able to track, or you know, they're saying they will be able to track which direction your pupil is looking.
That makes sense.
And that is, you will interact with this.
Now, so, is the camera on the contact lens, or are you wearing some unusual headgear?
The whole idea, their goal when this ships, and it's a few years out at this point, is to actually have all of this, including the battery power, this incredibly tiny lithium polymer batteries, will all be in the contact lens that goes over your eyeball.
To me, this is exactly what augmented reality should be, but it does sound like it's a little bit of science fiction, because the batteries in that thing, I mean, there's a camera in that thing. It sounds like we're not quite there yet.
That's exactly the kind of thing that was described in that book, Demon.
It's like Daniel Suarez's Demon.
Daniel Suarez.
Yeah. In that case, you were able to always, and maybe I can't remember if Damon had spectacles or a contact, but you could look at anybody.
Contact lenses.
It was contacts, and get exactly what that image shows, which is a little pop up over the person with their reputation, information about them. So is that kind of what they were showing, is an overlay on the real world that has information? I love that. I would buy that in a heartbeat.
Yeah, their goal is for this to be something for you to opt into, get the information, so that they're not constantly. I always think of that line in Ready Player One, you know, where he's like, "We've discovered we can cover 87% of the human vision without causing seizures." Right? They don't want to do that. They want this to be out of the way and not disrupting your vision until you go to look for information. And it's like, okay, who is that person? All right, you know, I look up and to the right, a menu drops down, I get my information, I look straight forward, the menu recedes. I hate to use the word graceful for an interface face, but the UI was astonishingly graceful I used it and I wasn't like, oh God, what were they thinking?
So this actually brings up one of the stories we wanted to talk about today, Kashmir Hill's piece in today's New York Times about a startup that is collecting face recognition information from everywhere. It's called Clearview. They're scraping images from Facebook, from Instagram, and they're not completely forthcoming about what they're doing and how they're doing it, but her headline is
it's
the secret
Peter Thiel company, so
yeah, right. Right. Yeah, the secretive company that might end privacy as we know it. Law enforcement is using their massive database. The problem is, you know, you're not opting into it. If you've got images up on the internet, you're probably in the Clearview database. They claim to have scraped from Facebook, YouTube, Venmo, where you put your profile picture on it. Millions of other websites, a database of 3 billion images. Federal law enforcement says we don't really know how it works or who's behind it, but we sure love it. We sure like to use it. Imagine adding that capability to those contact lenses. You'd know as you walk down the street, oh, that guy's a convicted felon. Oh, that guy's got an outstanding warrant. That guy's just a scary looking. I don't normally like stories that are designed to scare you. But this does scare me a little bit. So it's Peter Thiel. I didn't realize that.
He's backing it.
Yeah, he did Palantir, which was another kind of company working in the shadows, also widely used by law enforcement, gathering information from a variety of sources, not face recognition, but database information, and then selling it to law enforcement. In fact, if you've read your Tolkien, you know what a palantir is, isn't it? One of those things the wizards use to see, like a crystal ball, anywhere in the world, all the palantirs are connected. It's a little creepy, I guess. Hey,
did you see Anon on Netflix?
Not yet. Is it good?
Well, it's good because the idea of this is Clive Owen plays detective, and as he's walking, he gets information on everyone he sees as he's walking.
Exactly.
Because every single and then there's somebody who actually has anonymity, and the whole
that's the most dangerous person of all.
Fun.
right?
Yes. Actually,
in a land where everybody's face is in the database, who are the suspects? People who aren't. And that's precisely the problem.
If you aren't, you don't actually exist in their world. That's where it gets really squirrely.
In a future where technology has rendered privacy obsolete, a detective investigates a serial assassin who has been deleted from all visual records. I'm guessing that's Amanda Seyfried. Maybe not. I recognize her face.
It'll be the future where you get plastic surgery so that no one knows who you are so you can Instagram more often.
You know, a lot of Neal Stephenson's latest sci-fi book, The Fall, all the teenagers are wearing devices that project images over their face for anonymity.
Right.
I can imagine a world.
And then they'll just use sub-millimeter wavelength radar to scan your skull as you go by or something else.
Still be able to see what's going on. Yeah.
Got to get titanium plating.
This is Sam, you brought this up today on The Tech Guy. This is a category of technology. These contact lenses that have both great benefits and great risks. You were talking about Elon Musk's Starlink. And we both, or no, it wasn't you, it was Chris Marquardt, our photo guy. We both agree that we want global gigabit internet, no matter where you go anywhere in the world, from these low Earth orbit satellites.
But if you've got 40,000 of these things orbiting around, casting, reflecting the sun, everywhere, you're not going to be able to see the sky anymore.
Right. So on the one hand, it's a great idea.
Can you imagine? Everyone will be able to track you, like, everywhere. It's just so profoundly creepy to me.
This is actually something that's coming with autonomous vehicles, too. When we do start to deploy autonomous vehicles in significant numbers, it's not going to be vehicles that we sell to consumers. It's going to be robo-taxi services, autonomous mobility services.
Yeah.
So every one of these things is going to have sensors in there that's going to monitor, who's getting in the vehicle, what their state is when they're in the vehicle, if somebody gets sick or, has a heart attack or something, if they leave anything behind. Whoever's operating these fleets is going to want to know who's in there so that they can do billing and everything. And you won't if you're in these things. I mean, already today, if you carry a phone, you're being tracked anyway. But it's going to keep accelerating as we move into these new kinds of services where the systems depend on knowing who you are and where you're going.
It's like the Amazon Go store. You don't have to pay for anything. The cameras know.
Well, it's already that anonymity is almost impossible to keep. If you travel, across borders, if you're going to end up using a credit card, if you're using a cell phone, like anonymity is almost like this is going to be one day where anonymity itself will be illegal, that you will have to make sure that you're kind of tracked wherever you are. And it's like the gateway drug. We're all already way overly addicted to our phones. The ability to unplug is really difficult.
Georgia, besides being a senior editor at iMore, you are a psychotherapist. Is there, I don't know why I'm telling you that. I think you know that. for those who don't.
I am.
But is there, I would imagine there's also a deep psychological risk to this. People want to be known, but maybe that's a little bit too much.
It's kind of funny because the latest trend that I've seen in my work is people saying that, like young teens saying, I'm actually on my phone too much. I don't want to use it as much. I'm trying to unplug. And this is the largest growth population, which was the strongest for addiction. That's actually being the first people that are saying, you know what, this is too much. I don't want to use it. And it's the first week that I had three people say, I try not to use my phone anymore, which was really pretty powerful because of how addictive its nature is, and they're not attached to social media, or they're trying not to use Instagram. One is because of its psychological effects, and the other is because Facebook is now looked at as creepy by the newest generation, not as something that's cool. It's something that your grandmother does.
That encourages
not me. That there's anything wrong with that.
Grandma? Yes, there is. That encourages me because, of course, part of the debate that's going on is, should government be regulating these giant companies, especially Facebook, to protect us from ourselves? It's encouraging. I think that's a terrible solution, but if it's the only solution, then it's the only solution. But it's encouraging that maybe we don't need that if people are, you know, self-correcting. If they're going to be say, you know what, I could tell this is bad for me, I'm going to use it less. That would be a very encouraging thing to me.
I still think that they probably will need to have regulations. They have too much power. Like, they have too much power. There's no way that a company with that much power will not be able to be evil with it. It's just, it corrupts. So once you taste power and how much money they can make and how much they can control what people do and say, which, if you have information to everyone, like, really, like, there's more information about me on my phone. I'd rather, if I had to choose between my husband being subpoenaed or my phone, like, I'll take my husband.
He knows a lot less about you.
He does.
I bet he doesn't even notice when you get your hair color changed.
No, like he wouldn't notice. Like, really?
Did you get a haircut?
No, yeah, he wouldn't.
He wouldn't know.
I would say that that's because he cares about, like, you know, inside of me, the deep.
Oh,
truth.
Is that it?
As a person,
I think
he no
that's my
cares
excuse
about
to my wife
truth.
Every time she comes back from a haircut.
I think he cares.
You just always, yeah.
What's for dinner? That's really. So this, okay, we have a theme on this show, which is double-edged sword, because like Starlink. Like face recognition, you could see positives and negatives. And we're going to take a break. When we come back, I think we got to talk about the United States Attorney General William Barr and the latest battle with Apple over a terrorist's iPhone and what it all means. And I think that you said something interesting, Georgia, when you said maybe what will happen is we'll get to a world where it's illegal not to be in the database. I think we may get to a world where it's illegal to use encryption. That's the only way. You can't force people to unlock phones, but you can say it would be illegal to have a crypto device. And I wonder if that's where we're headed. We're going to talk about that in just a second. iMore.com, Georgia Dow, great to have you. Haven't seen you in ages. Still doing the 3D VR thing?
I am. Yeah. We've gone to some 2D games as well. But,
what?
Yeah. My kids
How
are
retro.
Now. My husband and my kids are playing, like, Castlevania's
what?
Symphony of the Night. Like, really old school 1997.
See?
Gaming.
See?
A Metroid.
It's all coming back.
Game.
It's all
yeah,
coming back.
Yeah, but
man.
I still, there's nothing like a zombie apocalypse. And
how many VR rooms do you have now?
Four.
You say that as if there's something to be ashamed of. That's something you
a little. It's a little
proud
bit
of.
Much, but you know, we have. There's four of us in the family, and if we all want to play a game together, we can.
Sure.
And I like tech, so there we go.
Nice. Also with us, Sam Abul Samad. How many cars do you have?
I own only two.
Wow.
But, you know, like, currently there's two more in the driveway, two additional ones in the driveway.
Your neighbors must be confused.
I get to drive other people's cars.
Yeah. And Patrick Norton, who is currently rolling coal down the streets.
No, I never roll coal.
Good.
I have 800 foot-pounds of torque, but I do not roll coal.
You, that's by the like way, taught me what rolling coal means, so thank you.
That was an odd conversation.
Our show today brought to you by Capterra, the way to find the right business software for you and your business. New year, bigger goals, time to get the big things done in your business better and faster. That means no more Windows 7, no more Windows XP, no more Internet Explorer. It's time to get some modern stuff. And where do you go to find out what's new, what's out there? Capterra, the free website millions of people use every month to find software for their business. Capterra simplifies the search in just a few easy steps. First of all, you say, well, here's what I need. And by the way, 700 categories, thousands of different programs, pretty much anything you might do in business, from yoga studio management to CRM to video management and more. You go in there, you say, this is what I'm looking for. You can narrow it down with their smart search tool and the filters. Check the boxes for the features you need. What's nice is they're customized depending on the category you're looking at. This is music school software. What? So there's quite a bit of it. You can say, well, I want a free tier. I want to be able to schedule. I want to be able to manage students, whatever features you need. And you see how it's great that this selection is appropriate to the category that you're in. Narrow it to a short list, compare them side by side, which makes it very easy to see what does what. But then this is when the best part happens. When you're at Capterra.com/twit, you'll see over a million reviews from actual software users. Capterra vets them to make sure that everything there is valid, a valid user. And that is the kind of information you need to find exactly the right software for you. This is what makes Capterra so great. Did I mention it's free? It's free. Capterra can help your business thrive by making the software buying process as easy and effective as possible. You shouldn't be using Windows 7 at work anymore. It's time to get something a little more modern. Go to Capterra.com/twit. There's lots of other stuff there, too, by the way. It's the leading free online resource for business software. Helpful articles, free guidebooks, step-by-step ebooks, a whole lot more. Capterra.com/twit. We're looking for a new CRM program, and Capterra really helped us find exactly the program that's right for us. Capterra.com/twit. Make an informed software decision for your business. CAPTERRA, Capterra.com/twit. Capterra's software selection simplified. Say that again. You don't roll coal, but you have how many 100,000 pounds of torque?
I think around 800 foot-pounds.
Is that a lot, Sam? I'm going to hire Sam to translate for me when I talk to Patrick from now on.
It is an adequate amount. I would say that's
you can never have too much torque.
That has long been my philosophy, that there's no such thing as too much torque.
Wow. I don't think I've driven a car where I even knew how much torque I had.
Well, it's
you
okay.
Probably
you
had close to that in your
my
model.
My Tesla?
Actually.
Did it have 800 pounds, yeah. Foot-pounds of torque?
And you had it from zero RPM through maximum RPM.
Yes, I did notice that.
I unfortunately have a torque curve.
No, I did notice that because when I started, the front wheels kept going up. And I thought, this is a complicated story. It's been getting the headlines this week. You may remember in Pensacola, Florida, a Saudi military officer who was training at the Pensacola Naval Air Station, killed three service members, wounded eight, and then was shot himself after shooting one of his iPhones. Clearly, he understood that iPhone might contain some important information. The FBI, apparently, and this is one thing that's really frosted Apple, did go to Apple right away, and Apple helped, giving him access to his iCloud account, to a lot of information about the person. They helped as much as they could, but the one thing that Apple cannot do, and that's why this is a little different than the San Bernardino case from a few years back. In fact, this is the Lawfare blog, Nicholas Weaver writing, Pensacola isn't San Bernardino, because in San Bernardino, it was an older iPhone. They could have given the information to the FBI, or they could have done something to modify it. This time, Apple has no access to that information. They've been very careful to make sure that the device is encrypted in a way that even Apple can't see it. In the San Bernardino case, the FBI eventually dropped their request because they figured out, there's an Israeli company that sells software that will crack this, and they were able to get into it. They may be able to do the same with the Pensacola case. Apparently, Graykey and Celebrate are the two big companies that do this. Graykey does have something that will get into even an iPhone 11. Nobody talks about it because they know that if they talked about it, Apple would fix it as soon as they could. What do you think? Let me ask you, Patrick. What do you think Attorney General Barr really wants?
Well, he wants them to magically unlock everything and give them all the information immediately. The same thing that the Attorney General's or the FBI, I should say, wanted in previous cases. Law enforcement wants, for the most part, full access immediately. They want a magic. But I mean, this is the same thing. My former, your current senator,
Dianne Feinstein,
who just
wait a minute. You aren't in California anymore, or did you just become a citizen of your own land?
Well, we'll discuss domicile on another exciting podcast.
Have you departed our fair golden state? Are you one of many people who have just said goodbye to a 14% tax rate and an 8% sales tax? Are you one of those people?
Yes.
I could not
field a large enough rat, so I sold my house.
Oh, congratulations.
We are out. We are exploring and searching for a new location. But, you know, the thing, I mean, you know, Feinstein's like, this is, I love security. I love, it's good. It's been so good for business in the state. Now, if you just put a little key that only, you know, this is a security argument from forever. There's one side that's like, everything should have a back door because we need to have access to everything. And the other side's like, if there's a back door, eventually everyone will have access to it. I'm a big First Amendment person. The problem is if all speech is protected, you know, barring the stuff that's been settled about, you know, yelling fire in a crowded movie house, you know, then the Illinois Nazis get to march up in March, which is why the ACLU, you know, fought for their right to be, you know, villainous scumbags in public, which I think is great. I love it when you identify the Nazis and you can go hunt them down and exterminate them. That's personal opinion.
We're not advocating, incidentally.
Yeah.
You know, as far as I'm concerned, you could punch him in the nose, but let's not hunt them.
Yeah,
back.
If Warren Ellis is telling you it's okay to punch a Nazi in the face, it's probably okay. I digress. But the challenge here, right, is people who are responsible for security and safety want access, and there are people who also believe, you know, this is an argument that goes back a long time. People who would give up a little liberty for safety deserve neither, right?
In the words of Ben Franklin. This is, though, that same double-edged sword. We do want protection from terrorism. We do want law enforcement to be able to do their job. But at the real question is, can you give law enforcement or anybody access to this data without giving bad guys access to this data? Here's what further complicates it from my point of view. AG Barr must indeed know, according to Forbes, the FBI already knows how to unlock an iPhone 11 Pro Max. They already know, using technology from Gray Key. So Gray Key, if Gray Key can unlock an iPhone 11 Pro Max, then it means the FBI can unlock the shooter's phone. And now I'm starting to think that that's really not AG Barr's agenda.
Mm-hmm. No, it's about making companies like Apple look bad. You know, to make them appear to be on the wrong side of this issue, and then hopefully get Congress to act and do, you know, to introduce some kind of legislation to do what you talked about, you know, which is to make encryption illegal, or, you know, to force them to put back doors into it, which, you know, on this one, you know, I humbly have to disagree with Steve Gibson. You know, I don't think that you can safely do it. I don't think that there is a safe way to, you know, create that kind of escrow system for this key and not have it abused by somebody.
Georgia?
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. There's only one reason for them to go public, and that's to put pressure on Apple to try to create as much bad press for them so that the court of public opinion is against them and wants this, and then they will push it through Congress as quickly as possible. And they just want to make sure that Apple is going to get as much bad press. So every time this happens, they push them, even though, you know, that they probably even have it opened already. Who knows? Right.
Here's what Nicholas Weaver writes in the Lawfare blog. The FBI's request for Apple's help is puzzling. If the government takes Apple to court, as it did in the San Bernardino case, the judiciary can't compel Apple to provide any meaningful assistance because there is no more meaningful assistance Apple can provide. San Bernardino was about Apple not wanting to assist the FBI. This is about Apple being incapable of assisting the FBI. So even if the case winds up in court, real help from Apple is not going to come out of a judicial battle. The meaningful fight, this is exactly what you said, Georgia, the meaningful fight is in the court of public opinion.
And if he was, you can tell that if they were going to go through this and be really honest about it, they would have stated that, you know what, Apple's helped us as much as we could. We wish that they would create a back door so that we could, you know, not have to go through this, or it would be faster. But they don't state any of those things. They try to put Apple in as dark of a light as possible in hopes that people get really angry. Yeah. And, you know, that we can say that we do have a kind of hair trigger society right now that, you know, the zeitgeist of the moment kind of goes through all of social media with people being exceptionally angry. and it's fast.
Yeah, we
so
live
that's
in, a,
what they're
in,
hoping
an,
for.
In an era of outrage.
Yeah. Well, the, and people the era don't know outrages. That much.
Patrick,
go ahead.
Yeah, the problem, you know, the real Sam. Problem is that, you know, as bad as terrorism is, you know, and I'd say it's a bad thing, no doubt about it. It's
oh good,
you know, in the grand scheme of all the agree. Issues we have, it's not actually that big of an issue. It doesn't affect that many people, you know, compared to so many other things. You know, if you look at, you know, how many people in this country are going without
smoking,
proper health care, or not being able to afford food and shelter, right. you know, terrorism is not really that big a deal.
I'm going to go one step.
To generate contracts.
Yeah. I'm going to go one step farther than you, because I think really. I don't want to be a conspiracy theory guy, but I feel like Attorney General Barr is emboldened by the current situation in the United States. He feels like he has an opportunity, perhaps a brief window of opportunity, to do what I think some, not all, by far not all, but some in law enforcement want, which is to create a surveillance state. What some in law enforcement would like to do is have a perfect view, a panopticon, a perfect view of everything that happens in the country. And I don't think it's solely to protect us from terrorism, or, you know, they'll often use things like terrorism or child abuse or child pornography, because those things really get people outraged and upset. But I don't think it has really much to do with that. I think it has a lot more to do with just controlling the populace and really knowing what's going on, so you can suppress dissent. So you can do all the kinds of things true authoritarian regimes do. And I honestly think that that's what's going on. I think Barr is, in some ways, represents the worst of law enforcement, the people who want total information.
I'm probably the last person to defend Barr, but I think he may genuinely just want the magic button on any given crime or any given situation, and that he's not intentionally planning to create a surveillance state. I mean, you know, if that's a side effect, as long as his side is in control, he'll be really happy about it. You know, and there's a lot of people.
You don't think he wants a Chinese-style surveillance apparatus in the United States?
I don't know the man.
There are others
personally.
In this administration who do.
Yeah,
absolutely. No, and I'll be honest with you, there's others in every administration who just want perfect clarity on all the issues at all time. I mean, it's unfortunately is not something that is restricted to the Republican side of the fence. There are lots of Democrats who, you know, are fairly
senior. Diane Feinstein, you brought her up. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's either way, it's creepy and unnecessary and fundamentally un-American and kind of evil.
That's kind of that's the point, is it's unconstitutional. It's anti-American, but you can see why people will say, but we'd be safer. And I think that's some of the argument in China, but
would
we preserve
really?
Order this way. Wouldn't you rather have an orderly country?
Yeah. I don't think anyone really thinks to themselves that they're going to use this for ill. They think that if I had full knowledge, you can see the same thing with like parenting. If I knew everything that my child was doing at every moment, I could stop bad things.
I would
from
be
happening.
Really depressed.
Right?
No, that's a really good point, though.
It's true.
Actually, that's a great analogy. As a mom,
yes. You
would like to know exactly where your kid is at all times,
honestly,
everything they're doing. But that's not good for the kid.
That would be helpful, and you could stop things and you could protect them, but in the end what you're doing is you're disempowering them and not allowing them to be able to think for themselves and to be able to make their own choices, even if they're the wrong choice, to learn from those decisions. So I don't think that a lot of times I don't think that's out of malice. I think that we're all a little bit narcissistic, and you believe that if I used it, I would use it for good. Like, you know, Galadriel with the ring. Like, I would totally take the ring. Like, I would be a good dark queen. And,
yes.
You know, all powerful.
Everybody thinks they could use the ring of power 100%. Safely.
100%. But the thing is that power corrupts. And once you know everything, it becomes really dangerous. And that's why we need to make sure that the Constitution is protected, because you will out of good think that you can use something that later becomes really bad, and you cannot put the genie back inside of the bottle.
I should point out that I'm not making up this total information awareness. This was the acronym in 2003, shortly after 9/11. Our law enforcement in this country actively sought this kind of information. And the whole point was total information awareness of transnational threats requires keeping track of individuals and understanding how they fit into models, knowing everything that's going on. And yes, we'll use the ring of power wisely.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great analogy. And it's bad for the kid, right? You know, for you to know everything, even though you can keep him safer that way.
100%.
Even if a 100%. Current administration did use it wisely, they're, you know, as mm-hmm. we've said, you know, in the past, you know, about tech companies, about companies like Apple, you know, even if they're doing the right thing with privacy today, there's no guarantee that, you know, 5 years from now that, you know, that you're going to have people in power that, you know, once you have that ability, that they will use it wisely. You know,
you
can't create that. You can't create that environment in the first place, because otherwise someone will eventually abuse it.
They did.
But we're so short-sighted. Like, we really only think about our here and now. Like, if people really understood the cost that you would play later, that, you know, even though your government may be a really honorable government, maybe these same rules could be used for ill by another government that may not be as honorable or have as much integrity. And we often sell ourselves off. Like, we sell for short-term gain, we sell off our future. Like, no one would be smoking if, you know, they say that you lose 7 seconds of your life. If we all froze for 7 seconds every time you took a puff of a cigarette, no one would be smoking. But since you pay that off later, we think, doesn't really matter.
Aren't we, as humans, masters of denial?
Oh, yes. We are our own best liars.
So, again, it's a double-edged sword. And, you know, I could totally understand how the citizens of China or Singapore or Dubai say, well, we like having an orderly – we don't like graffiti and homelessness and crime. We like having an orderly society. And if we have to give up a little privacy to get that, it doesn't seem like too high a price to pay.
But then we end up in a Black Mirror kind of state, right? Like, I've seen Minority Report. I don't want to live that way.
Yeah. I don't know. Again, this is that technology has brought into relief so many issues like this, where it's difficult to know exactly what's the right thing to do. You know, and because of these capabilities, we couldn't have these capabilities if we didn't have vast databases, huge computational power. We wouldn't be able to use this information. You can't have total information awareness without massive technology, modern technology. I just learned a great new acronym, NOBUS, N-O-B-U-S. And it's a doctrine at the NSA. I didn't know about it. Nobody but us can use it. And Michael Hayden, who was a former director of the NSA, was apparently talking about it. The notion that there are exploits that would take, he used the analogy, 4 acres of supercomputer power to take advantage of. So we don't have to publicize those exploits or tell the companies about them or get them fixed, because nobody but us can take advantage of them.
Yet.
The NSA did recently release kind of a shocking release of information about a Windows exploit that they at least had the courtesy to wait until Microsoft had fixed it. It was called Eternal Blue, and it was a flaw in the Windows Crypto API, crypto32.dll, that validates elliptical curve cryptography. And the NSA actually did something kind of almost unheard of this past week. They had discovered this. They did get Microsoft to fix it. Actually, before they did that, they told the military, stop using Windows for crypto. Here's the threat to you and me. Because of this flaw, it's possible to spoof a certificate on Microsoft Windows. Apparently, Windows 10, Windows Server 2016, and Windows Server 2019 were vulnerable. They've been patched. They were patched last Tuesday. And if you spoof those crypto certs, you could, for instance, offer somebody a file that looks to be Microsoft Office, but is signed by a Microsoft certificate, but instead is malware. So it also impacts HTTPS, signed files and emails, signed executable code. Kind of a serious flaw. This was not a NOBUS. The NSA did alert Microsoft. It has been fixed. Nevertheless, there are other exploits that the NSA keeps to itself. I love it. No bus. Nobody but us. By the way, if you were running Windows 10, you might want to make sure that you got Patch Tuesday's patch. As long as we're talking about flaws, this is one Steve was also talking about on Tuesday that affects virtually all cable modems and can't be patched by you, can't be fixed by you. Patrick, did you read about this cable haunt? Cablehaunt.com, if you're curious.
No.
Yeah. My modem is impacted. Almost all the modems in the world are impacted. Any modem that has a Broadcom chip in it, and it's a kind of a not an unusual flaw. Very often, companies like Broadcom and Intel will write example code that for how to take advantage of certain features in their hardware. And it is not at all unusual for this example code to then be taken up wholesale by companies, put into their modems without any vetting, without any error checking. Never, it was Broadcom, of course, never intended it to be used, but right. It was widely used.
It's like a lot of cheap web cameras and a lot of the inexpensive Internet of Things stuff.
Yeah.
Where they Intel, slap thank a you for the code. On the-
yeah, thanks, Qualcomm. I'll just use that. Cable haunt is a critical vulnerability found in cable modem manufacturers. There are 200, the researchers found 200 million cable modems in Europe alone that are vulnerable, virtually all of them. Both cable modems I use are vulnerable, my Motorola Aeris and my Netgear CM1000. It's because many of these modems have spectrum analyzers. You go to the modem's IP address :8080. They're open on port 8080. And with a buffer overflow, you can take control of the modem. There's a proof of concept. There's a test script at cablehaunt.com. If you want to get to work right now and start building that malware, hasn't been found in the public. But here's the real problem: your cable company has to fix it. You can't. And unfortunately, in the process of fixing this, that even if you bought the cable modem, which I did. You can't fix it, even though it's my modem.
Even though it's my Android phone.
Even though it's my modem, Comcast is the only one that can flash the firmware. And they don't like to do it because it takes you off the internet for a period of time while this is happening.
And, well, they also have to patch it, fix it.
They got
to
do a lot of work. It. And they're probably going to get a million. If you're Comcast and you have tens of millions of subscribers, you're probably going to get a few hundred thousand calls. My internet's out. What's going on? Once control is achieved by attacker, it can be used to change the default DNS server, conduct man-in-the-middle attacks remotely, hot swap code, just the whole firmware you could change, upload, flash, and upgrade firmware silently, disable ISP firmware upgrades, change every config file and settings, get and set SNMP OID values, change all associated MAC addresses, change serial numbers, and put you in a botnet. It is a nasty flaw, and you're almost certainly affected. If you go to cablehaunt.com, they have a list of cable modems that are vulnerable, and it's a pretty good list.
Well, they also say they don't really have any examples of it being found in the wild, but they also point out that anybody who's sophisticated could probably cover their tracks in the process of using this exploit, which is always really charming.
Exactly. Now, the only good news is they have to do this, they have to do it from within your network. So what they do is they have to compromise a system in your internal network, which then can write to the modem. They can't do it from the outside world in. They have to do it from the inside world out. So once again, patch and do the best you can to protect yourself on all your devices. If you've got an IoT device, good luck. And since this exploit now is the code is out there, I don't know what's going to happen. Just thought I'd mention that. Let's take a little break so you can absorb this and run to fix. Steve says, and I tried this, I couldn't get it to work. If you can, first of all, check to see. You need to know what your, not your router, but your cable modem's IP address is. In my case, for my CM1000, it was 192.168.100.1. And if you go to that address, :8080, your spectrum analyzer pops up. If that's the case, then you have it. Then that means you're vulnerable. And then he says you could set up a firewall rule that blocks outbound. This is what I was having a hard time doing. Outbound traffic on port 8080. I can't figure out how to do that. Maybe I don't know. I can block inbound, but outbound is a little harder. If you can do that, maybe that's
a mitigation. I just got a 404 on mine.
Well, but that may not be your... This is the problem. It may not be 192.168.100.1. The port's usually 8080, but you have to know what your cable modem.
Mine is 100.1.
So if you go there, you get the cable modem login. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So maybe you're all right.
I did the 8080, and it gave me a 404. So.
Yay. Or maybe your cable company's already patched it.
I don't know. It doesn't seem like Comcast would be too quick on anything like that. They usually take their time on these things.
We have a plan to fix it in 2025.
They launch Peacock.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we got to launch Peacock first. Let's take a little break. I'm going to talk about protecting yourself online, and then we'll have more. There's some other fun stuff to talk about, too. Good news, not just bad news. Amazon wants you to pay with a wave. What could possibly go wrong? Our show today brought to you by ExpressVPN. This is the VPN I use and I recommend. It is awesome because it's fast. They have VPN servers all over the world, more than 100 countries. Plus, they use a trusted server technology. They figured this out, and it's been audited by a third party, that not only do they not do any logging, they couldn't even if they wanted to. Their trusted server, which spins up when you get on their server and open the VPN and then spins down afterwards, is sandboxed so that it can't write to disk in any way, which means there's no way they can keep track of anything you're doing. Your privacy is 100% protected. Be more secure. Protect yourself against bad guys at the open Wi-Fi access point, from snoops at your internet service provider. And besides protecting your privacy and security online, you can also use it to take your TV watching to the next level. Woohoo! Because ExpressVPN has servers all over the world, you can go to Netflix, go to ExpressVPN, turn on your VPN, pick where you want. Let's say you want to watch Star Trek. You can watch it on Netflix in the UK, so all you got to do is tell ExpressVPN, I'm in London right now, and boom, you're watching Doctor Who and Star Trek on UK Netflix. Go to Japan, watch anime on Japanese Netflix. ExpressVPN hides your IP address, lets you control where you want sites to think you're coming from. It's so fast, they just do such a good job that you can stream HD no problem at all while you're on the VPN. And I know that because when I first tried this, I wanted to see, does this work? And I was watching Netflix in Japan. I forgot to turn it off for 3 days. And I didn't even know I was running through a VPN on my iPad for the longest time. That's how fast it is. I didn't even notice I was using. No buffering, no lag. It works everywhere. Mac, Windows, Linux, iPhone, Android, even on media consoles, on smart TVs. You can watch what you want on the go or on the big screen wherever you are. I love ExpressVPN. I love you guys. Right now, expressvpn.com/twit. You can get an extra 3 months for free when you sign up for a year. ExpressVPN.com/twit. About $7 a month when you get that extra 3 months. That's a very good deal for the best VPN on the market. ExpressVPN.com/twit. Thanks for supporting us, ExpressVPN. Apple's doing some good things. I just read a story in Digiday, which caters to the advertising community. Apple's new privacy features have further rattled the location-based ad market. This is one for the good guys. You know that pop-up you get on iOS 13? You get it on Android now, too, when it says, hey, you know, Google has just, you know, checked your location 4 times in the last 24 hours. You know that pop-up? And it says, do you want to allow that? Or maybe only when the app's open, or maybe not at all? So that's been going on since iOS 13 was released in September. Ad tech sources are saying it has been a big hit to the amount of data they can gather. Digiday quotes Benoit Grouchko, who has a great name, by the way. Benoit Grouchko, he runs the ad tech business Temo. They do software for apps to collect that location data. He says 3 years ago, opt-in rates almost 100%. Almost everybody left location on. Ever since iOS 13, the opt-in rate now is often below 50%. People, when they're given the choice, say, you know what? No. 7 in 10 iOS 13 location signals analyzed by Location Sciences in the 6 weeks after iOS 13 came out, 80% of those users stopped all background tracking across their devices. So if you're in the business of selling based on location, publicity agency Starcom said this impacts the ability to tie users that research online and purchase in store, driving and measure footfall for clients. This is something Google offers, by the way. Google monitors credit card purchases and then says to an advertiser, hey, this guy saw your ad on Tuesday and went to the store and bought your product on Wednesday. Your ad's working. Not as easy. Not as easy. Time to celebrate, Georgia. You're an iPhone user.
I am. I love it. I love it.
And what do you do when you see that pop up?
I'll always opt out. I'm actually shocked that there's 50% of people that say
turn
that they will still allow it. What are you doing? Stop it. It's creepy. Would you want someone walking around tracking you? If you could see them, you know, snooping into your bathroom, looking at what you're doing, what you're surfing around, you'd say stop doing that. You'd close your blinds. There's a few of us maybe that'd be like, yay, into that. Most people would say no. Stop following me around everywhere I go.
Actually, you know what? I'm weird, Georgia.
Are you?
I always say always allow. In fact,
why?
It pisses me off because Apple doesn't usually give always allow as an option. There's really, most of the time, I see two options. Allow when app is in use, don't allow. You have to go into the settings to turn on always allow, and I do. Because I want them to know.
What do you want them to know?
Everything.
Everything. I like it.
Patrick knows.
I feel like they care.
Do you think that you get better targeted ads?
Yes.
Why?
What's wrong with that? I think I get better ads. I walk by the Levi's store and it says, hey, here's a coupon. You can go in. My Google Maps. I love that feature where I can look at my timeline and see all the places I've been. Why wouldn't I want that? You think they're following me around? Is it like somebody in
it is like following you around.
No, it's
again,
not.
It's
the best part of this conversation is like 2 minutes ago, it was like, I don't want law enforcement to be able to track us everywhere.
Right.
And the reality is, through third-party marketing tools, if they can identify your phone, which is not that hard to do, the level of mapping and tracking they can do now without using any official tools is kind of terrifying.
So you're saying, I don't worry about Google. You're saying, but you should realize that Google might be giving that information to the cops.
Or it's actually turned out a lot of apps sell the tracking information to third party services, which are then, you know, people can walk up with a credit card number and get information that you would freak out if it was made available directly from, you know, from Google or from Apple.
For example, the
amount of information the cars track is utterly terrifying at this point. Like, you know, I may never buy a new car again based on the amount of information that's being pulled out of the
oh, man, I drove a Tesla. I would call Tesla and say, you know, in fact, this happened. You know, I had it in forward and your car went backward. And they say, well, no, wait a minute. What time did that happen? Well, this afternoon. And look, no, you were going, you had it in forward. I could see the log.
No, the sensor registered it as forward, not.
That's right. What I should have said. It's your sensor's fault.
Yeah. Patrick, would it depend on the amount of torque, though?
Well, if it accidentally goes into reverse and you bump into it, you know, with your, I'm going to pick on
Come
Prius
on.
Because it's here. No, well, actually,
I don't mind if Elon knows, and I don't mind if Google knows. Google's not handing my information over to law enforcement. In unprecedented geofence searches,
but it's all those other apps.
They're not what
I've got Android 10 on my Pixel 3 now, and you know, they added the same thing in there so that now in all the apps you could go in and set your location preferences by app. You know, to always allow, you know, allow when in use or never allow, and I was shocked. You know, after upgrading to 10, you know, some of these apps that were coming up and asking, you know, for location permission that they had, I mean, you know, games and stuff that had no business knowing where I was. I don't mind, you know, Google Maps, you know, having my location. I mean, that's
well,
why
you have
it's
to.
There. It's
Maps won't work.
Yeah.
Would,
yeah.
You know, and, you know, things like, you know, Lyft or Uber, clearly they need to know where I am when I'm using them. But there is no reason for a ride hailing app to know where I am when I'm not using the app. You know, mm-hmm. Anytime yeah. that I'm not using the app, it's off. Okay. And I think the only app I have set to always allow yeah. is Google Maps because, like you, Leo, I like the timeline. Yeah. I find it useful.
Plus, I want to help law enforcement when there's a robbery yeah. and well, they want to know everybody who was in 500 feet of the robbery.
But it's
a man with a gold jacket and a gold hard hat was at this location.
Look at your cameras. You can't miss me.
Well, I think it's about transparency, though. It's that you don't really know what they're going to be doing with it and who right. they're going to be selling it to and what they're going to be using it for. There are no regulations to make sure that they're really being honest and it's legible. No one reads the privacy. Like I have every once in a while, it's terrifying. And then I always don't, you know, if I really want the app, I won't read it because then I will say no, but no one reads it. It's illegible. So it's a big problem.
Actually, I'll be honest. I almost always select only when using app, because that seems reasonable to me. And if it's an app that shouldn't have location information, if it's Fortnite yeah. or something, then I say no.
Remember the flashlight app that some yeah. nefarious company bought, and then it was basically, it went from being like, you can turn on the light for your camera when you're not actually using your camera. And then they did an update, and it was looking for information. It was basically accessing all possible information on your phone, your photos, your contact yeah. information, everything. It was kind of fascinating to watch because, you know, the millions of downloads for this. This was before they integrated this stuff into the operating system. People kept downloading it, installing it, and presumably saying, okay, that's how badly they wanted a flashlight app. But there's an article that the New York Times did back in the middle of December, 12 million phones, one data set, zero privacy, where somebody turned over a data set which was 50 billion pings, quote, 50 billion pings from the phones of more than 12 million Americans as they moved through several major cities, including Washington, New York, San Francisco, and Los Angeles.
Wow.
You know, basically because apps that would track you and then report the information, you know, it also meant that these unregulated, you know, third-party app data collection centers could allow anybody with that information to, you know, track the location of, you know, people who probably shouldn't be tracked or don't want to be tracked, whether they are celebrities or, you know, exes or, you know, abused. You know what I mean? It's kind of amazing how much information is out there, and just it's, you know, the William Gibson line, it's my favorite. The street finds its own uses for things. You know, the street's going to find its own use for this information, and it might be creepy as hell.
That's actually a really important point, is that you can invent a technology and have an idea about how it's going to be used. Law enforcement can have an idea. But, you know, well, with key escrow, we'll only use the ring of power if for good, not evil. But the street finds its own uses is a really good thing to keep in mind. I like that, Patrick. Yeah.
Thank William Gibson.
Yeah. It just is, that's the nature of technology. It flows like water. I should have brought this up, Georgia. I'm curious what you think about this. It was an article in the New York Times. Panicking about your kids' phones? New research says don't. A growing number of academics are challenging assumptions about the negative effects of social media and smartphone on children. See, that kid's even from Canada. And actually, he's not. He's from Newport Beach. But this is research that was published on Friday. 40 studies. It was one of those survey of surveys. Two psychology professors looked at the studies, links between social media and depression and anxiety among adolescents. They say, based on our meta study, that's a small and inconsistent link. There doesn't seem to be a strong evidence.
They didn't really take a look at a lot of different variables, though, like just from in my office. And I see probably 20 families a week, every single week. And the amount of kids that are negatively affected by social media is vast.
Yeah.
And again, it's not a big data study, but this is all I see. And this is kids that are talking to me, and they have no reason to lie because I'm not going to be telling their parents what they say. And there's none of them that say that they wish they were on the phone more, or that social media does good, or that, you know, how many kids are now bullied on social media or feel like they're not good enough because of what they see, or they're trying to become someone that they aren't because of that. The amount of anorexia, wanting a plastic surgery for my actual clients is really strongly linked to the media of which they are consuming. Kids are naturally mimics. They model behavior. We are programmed to model what we see. There's a part of our brain that have mirror neurons, and that means that they fire with what we see. And then, like, kids, they don't care what you say. Like, a lot of this advertising, it's all about, like, say this, do that. They care about what they see and what they consume. And so if they care about someone on social media, they want to become like them. And they don't really understand that most of it is filters, it's expensive lighting, it's, you know, professional makeup artists and having all of these different things that are at their, you know, whim. And they believe the lies, and then their, you know, feeling of depression, and that they're not good enough, and that they should be doing more, and their world becomes about all of this supernatural fluff that really is crap. Like, you are not who you, what you consume. You're not your title. You're not your car you drive, though Twerk is awesome. You're not how many VR systems that you have in your house. You really are your personal characteristics and the levels of care to that, of building yourself as your character instead of, you know, what other people will see has been changing, and that's been changing really quickly and rapidly because of the effects of social media. So I, again, don't see, my world does not reflect to that. And so I looked at that article with a little bit of like, yeah, I'm not so sure about that. That wasn't, you know, pushed or propelled by lobbyists like, you know, Facebook, and, you know, I don't want to throw out that this might be fake media, but I'm just, you know, consuming it with a grain of salt, because there's a whole bunch of this, you know, again, Facebook and Instagram and everything else wants you to not limit how much your kids get access to it. But I would say limit it.
The authors of these studies say they have not taken any funding from the tech industry. They say, we've been outspoken critics of the industry on issues other than mental health, privacy, and lack of transparency. Ms. Ogders added she was not surprised that people had a hard time accepting her findings. Her own mother questioned her research after one of her grandsons stopped talking to her during the long drives she used to enjoy. But children tuning out their elders when they become teenagers is hardly a new trend. Some said also, yeah, there might be an effect, but it's not. Don't compare it to other factors like lack of sleep, poor diet. There are things kids can do that really can severely impact them much more dramatically than smartphone use.
Facebook has some of the brightest minds on the planet working to make the Pavlovian response to Facebook be as addictive as possible, so you spend more time on Facebook, so you're up until 4 a.m. and not sleeping. That's, you know what I mean?
You know what I did? I woke up at 4 o'clock this morning, as I do every night. I don't know why, but that's something about that hour. It's funny that you should say that. And you know what I did? I set up a wiki. Then I went back to bed. I don't need Facebook.
I think they have a pill for that, right?
I don't know. There's a pill for everything.
Before I am setting up a wiki pill was being developed by a large major pharmaceutical firm. Do you find yourself waking up and doing unnecessary web creation in the wee small hours of the morning?
I woke up and I thought, loves, but never you know uses? What I don't have? I don't have a wiki. I might have a problem, however. I even have a domain for it and everything. Anyway.
Well, at least you were, you know, used your time efficiently.
Efficiently. Someday I'll be glad I have that wiki. Here's some good news. Actually, before we do that, I'll give you some good news from Google in just a second. But first, speaking of tracking you, we don't track you, obviously. And there's a big move afoot. I've talked about this so much, I don't want to bore you. But ad tech is coming to podcasting. There are lots of podcasts that, Spotify, for instance, has already even announced that they're going to do more and more exclusive podcasts. You have to listen on the Spotify app. Spotify already knows everything they need to know about you. They've got your credit card number. And they plan on monitoring your podcast listening through that app. We do not do that. We will not do that, I promise you. But in its place, we do have a voluntary thing we do once a year. We'd love to ask you to participate in our TWiT annual audience survey. It just takes a few minutes. I already am getting email from people who are taking it saying, but you don't cover my unusual use case. Okay, that's fine. It's not possible to design a survey that fits everybody's unusual use case. The questions we ask on there are questions that we can use both to improve the product and to help us sell. Advertisers often want to know, for instance, how many women listen versus how many men. So we appreciate this. It's completely voluntary. We do not track you. We will never track you. That's not how we work here. But in order to help us sell the show, we do ask you once a year to take this survey. Twit.to, that's our URL shortener, twit.to/survey20, because it's 2020. Let us know what you think. There's no sign-up form. We're not going to use this information about you personally, only in aggregate. It just helps us make Twit better, helps us keep Twit on the air. And so thank you in advance. I know many of you do this. We usually get about 20 or 30,000 people taking the survey, and that's enough for us to use it to make it statistically valuable. So thank you. I appreciate you doing that. Twit.to/survey20, if you would do that. Our show today brought to you by Worldwide Technology. We're going March 5th, I think, is the plan to go to St. Louis to visit their amazing Advanced Technology Center. Patrick, you, I know, worked with Jim Latterback back in the day at the Ziff Davis Labs in Foster City. Those days of big magazines having giant testing labs so they could see, you know, test 300 printers or 800 network cards, those days are long gone. Is that ZD Lab still exist even, Patrick? Do you know?
I have no idea.
I can't imagine it does. I mean, who owns it?
All I can say is what I really missed was one of the great missed opportunities was when I got a phone call from somebody who said, do you know anybody who wants the Faraday cage from the lab?
Did you buy it?
It was 12 by 12 by 12
oh,
or
man,
10
you could
by
have
10
slept
by 10.
In that.
It was a giant, massive, incredibly expensive copper Faraday cage.
Wow.
And moving it would have cost, you know, more than I made in a month at that point, much less storage.
But then if you wake up at 4 in the morning, you can't set up a wiki.
Unless you have Ethernet.
Bingo! Worldwide Technology is taking the place of these old, centers. About 10 years ago, I think they realized there was going to be a need in enterprise tech for a place to trial technology, to test it out. They started building the Advanced Technology Center. It has grown like crazy in the last 10 years. It now has more than $500 million in equipment. I bet you they have a Faraday cage from hundreds of OEMs, key partners ranging from high-tech heavyweights like Cisco, VMware, AI disruptors like NVIDIA. Absolutely. They've got it all in there. This is what the engineers at WWT use to spin up proofs of concept, to test the system before they set it up on your premises, to pilot programs. It's a great way for engineers at WWT and their customers to confidently select the best solution. But here's the best part about this amazing lab. You can use it too. On-demand and schedulable labs or workshops, like, for instance, NVIDIA's deep learning workshop. Available to you 24/7 anywhere in the world. You don't even have to go to St. Louis to use it. It's online. There are hundreds of labs representing the newest advances in architectural solutions to accelerate customers on artificial intelligence and machine learning, and a whole lot more. You can learn about products before you launch. This lab as a service, they call it, is a dedicated lab space within the ATC where you could perform your own programmatic testing using this amazing technology ecosystem built by WWT. Customers of WWT stay with WWT for years and years and years because it's the best way to get help setting up enterprise technology. And this ATC is just one example. And these virtual labs, it's brilliant. WWT's engineers themselves work in these labs. They're there every day beta testing new solutions. Some of them based on the best, greatest, and latest NVIDIA technologies for AI, building reference architectures, custom integrations, help their customers see results faster, to help you know ahead of time if it's going to work with a lot less investment. This new lab as a service platform encompassing the entire ATC ecosystem is now available, creating a multiplier effect of knowledge and speed and agility anytime, anywhere around the world for WWT customers. Not just labs, too. You get access to studies, case studies, to articles, to hands-on labs, to other tools that make the difference in today's complicated and fast-paced enterprise world. To learn more about the ATC, to get insights into their newest features, to actually use it, go to WWT.com/twit. Worldwide technology simplifies the complex. WWT.com/twit. WWT, delivering business and technology outcomes around the world. Take advantage of this. Such a great thing to have. Google is doing something I think unprecedented. And boy, color me cynical, because I'm immediately saying, well, okay, well, what are they planning? They've said they are going to drop support for tracking cookies, for third-party cookies, by 2022. Third-party cookies, of course, are the thing that we tell everybody. You know, most browsers except Chrome, you can turn that off. That's the basically tracking cookies. Instead of using those, companies have now turned to other solutions like fingerprinting and all sorts of things. Google said that they are going to deprecate third-party cookies. They didn't say what they're going to offer instead. They say third-party cookies and cross-site tracking are a problem. Starting next month, they're going to limit insecure cross-site tracking. Cookies that don't include a same-site label as first-party only and require, they're going to block those. And they're going to require cookies labeled for 30-party use to be accessed only over secure HTTP. That makes them more secure, and they're going to slowly phase it out over time. Apple and Firefox both let you block tracking cookies. So does Brave, our sponsor. Microsoft says we're going to have some cookie blocking in their new version of Edge that's based on Chromium. Is this a good thing, or is this just kind of an announcement that Google's going to find something worse? I'm puzzled by it. I think it's a good thing. And in fact, privacy advocates like Benedita say, I retract my criticism. Kudos to Google. This is a big deal. Any thoughts, anybody? Sam?
It's hard not to be, you know, skeptical or cynical about this.
This is their business, is ads.
Yeah, you know, it seems like, you know, if Google is going to eliminate third-party cookies, they almost certainly have something that they think is at least as good or better.
Yeah, and maybe something that only they have access to, right?
Right.
That would be the perfect thing to do, is to stop something that everybody can use and only Google can use something even better.
Right. You know, it seems like they've probably figured out some way to do some sort of signals intelligence through Chrome, you know, that, and through Android, that gives them, you know, at least as good information. Or else, you know, maybe they've just determined that, you know, with all the other stuff going on with, you know, cutting back on location awareness and things like that, maybe they've decided that, you know, all this targeting and micro-targeting just isn't as valuable as it used to be.
Well, they don't say that they're not targeting people anymore. Like, they're still doing it, right? Oh, yeah. Like, this is only so good. They're still doing it. I'm still going to be using DuckDuckGo, which is like only so great of an experience at times.
You know what I use? You might try StartPage. Do you know about StartPage?
No.
And I'm a little worried because they got acquired by an advertising company. But the idea, which so maybe it's all moot, but yeah. The idea of StartPage is they use the Google index. So Google still is the gold standard for search, right?
Yeah.
But what they do is they anonymize it. And furthermore, when you do a search, startpage.com, you'll get the same results you'd get from Google, but as if you were in incognito mode. And then there is a button next to it to visit this site anonymously. And then they route you through an anonymizer, kind of like a little bit like a VPN, but not. And your IP address isn't visible to that site. So it lets you visit a site completely anonymously, which I think is really interesting. StartPage.
I think that's what Apple tries to do in iOS as well, right?
Right. And, you know, Verizon, this is a related story. Verizon, whom I wouldn't normally assume is the number one company in privacy, has also announced they're doing a private search engine.
Yeah, right.
What do they mean by private?
What do you mean by private?
It means that only they will have access to it. Yeah. They won't share it with anybody else.
Right. They can sell it. You know, they have the information. I don't know.
It's called OneSearch. It launched Tuesday. They say, we will not store records of what you search. We will not create profiles of your usage or share your search data with advertisers. They also say it gives unbiased, unfiltered results. Just like StartPage, that means it's not, Google, because you're logged into Google when you're using Google, tailors its results to you. So that's why when I search for me, I get such great results because it's tailoring it to me, right? Verizon says everyone sees the same result for the same search terms. And one search's results can self-destruct after a set period of time. Why would Verizon do this? It seems odd to me.
In hopes that then people don't regulate? I don't know.
Give me something I can search for. By the way, okay, I immediately have one problem. As soon as I click in the search, private encrypted search, I get a list of things people are searching for right now. She tells me, is that completely private?
They're not telling you who's searching.
Well, okay, yeah, I guess so. What should I search for that we would know if it was a good search? Sam, if I searched for Chevy Corvette, would you know what a good search is? What would you know a good search?
How about, when can I buy a mid-engine Corvette?
Can I buy a mid-engine Corvette? Okay. And then it says you can already buy a mid-engine Corvette for $120,000. And then here's the reveal date. It doesn't have, as you notice, the Google knowledge box on the right. It's just got search results. Let me just search because it does, by the way, have images, video. It has that anytime button, which lets you search by date. And they have safe search as well. Let me just search for Leo Laporte. Yeah. And by the way, the autocomplete seems to be as scary as Google. Okay. If I typed is. Yeah, I mean, there's a knowledge box from Wikipedia and other people. Patrick, when people search for Leo Laporte, they also search for Patrick Norton. Look at that.
I'm not arguing that.
No.
It's just, Verizon, in 2016 was at 1.3 million their fine to the FCC for super cookies.
Do you think this is a response to that?
I don't know. Weird. I mean, they own Yahoo. I covet unlimited data access to Verizon's network. I do not covet dealing with Verizon itself. I'm trying to figure out why they are doing this.
Verizon said OneSearch will generate revenue from the service by matching ads to search terms. Remember, when you do a Google search, you make money for Google. Believe it or not. That's why Google paid Apple $12 billion last year to be the default search in Safari on an iPhone, because it's that valuable. Mozilla makes money on Firefox because of the Google pays them hundreds of millions of dollars every year because of referrals. Maybe this is Verizon saying, we don't want to give Google that money. We want to keep it to ourselves. I don't know. It's one of those weird ones. Google's blocking third-party cookies. Verizon's starting a search engine. Cats are lying down with dogs. The world's about to end. That's all I can say. By the way, good news. I misreported this story, and I stand corrected now by Cameron Faulkner on The Verge. We had on Tuesday talked on MacBreak Weekly and iOS Today about the EU ruling saying there has to be chargers all have to be uniform for smartphones. And we took the tack that many did, that this meant that the EU was asking Apple to get rid of the Lightning cable. It wasn't about that end of the plug. It was actually about the charger brick. They've been trying to convince tech companies since 2009, for 10 years, to adopt a single wall charger instead of proprietary chargers, because there are so many wall chargers, 51,000 metric tons of e-waste per year, because there's so many different proprietary charging methods. They would like to now, by the way, it might not matter. Technology is moving more towards Type C and power delivery. And I suspect that all wall chargers, there will be a uniformity anyway, whether they make this law or not.
Even with USB-C, though, there's still some outliers like OnePlus, which has – they have their own – they don't
their own fast charging, they have their right? Own, yeah.
Yeah, they have their own proprietary fast charging system. Right. And
well, there's like four or five different fast chargings. I mean, there's really like four different competing fast charging systems. But, I mean, at least you can get it – it may take eight times as long, but any USB charger, if it's of high enough wattage, should be able to charge your phone. Was it say in that article, like when they initiated these efforts, there were 23 distinct charger connectors.
In 2009, this is from European Commission Vice President Maro Sefcovic, who said in 2009 when they started this, there were 30 proprietary charging methods. Now there are apparently just three. However, discarded useless chargers are filling up the e-waste. So I think
they're filling up my house.
Yeah. I read an article. Where did I read this? Every house has a wire drawer or a box of old chargers, right? That you think, well, someday I'll be able to use these. But you have no idea what they'll go to. I have that box.
What they're used for. You must have like a few boxes.
I do.
I've got a couple of those sitting about 10 feet away from me right now.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Just in case. You never know. You put it away and I'm like, is this for my scuba diving, you know? flashlight, or is this? I don't remember. So
here
then
it is.
I just keep them.
This is the Wall Street Journal. Admit it. You have a box of cords you'll never, ever use again.
Well, I cleaned out the garage and got rid of e-waste recycled about 150 pounds of.
That's
various,
when you
but
move.
Didn't you go through that stress, Patrick, of like that stress of like, but what if I need to charge my scuba diving flashlight and now I'm not going to know? Like, I threw out the cord that I need for that because that's stressing me. That and keys.
I
have a box of keys.
Well, that's what happened. Like when my wife and I moved 3 years ago, the kids were out of the house, and you know we went through a major purge, and we got rid of so much stuff, including a whole bunch of. You know, I went through all the electronic stuff and, you know, either donated it or took it to some e-waste place and got rid of a lot of stuff. I still have too much, but I definitely reduced by a lot.
I love Catherine Bindley for this article. This is just – and look at that box. That is almost literally my box, except I have four or five of them. And here at the station, at the studio, we've got bins. We've got binders full of boxes. This is her lead. Good job, Catherine. There's a box that moved with Sarah Lovelace and her husband from San Diego to Charleston, from Charleston to Dallas, from Dallas to Richland. The box, never unpacked, went into a closet of the garage each time. Contents, 20 to 30 electronics cords. The box was always just a part of our life. Says Ms. Lovelace, 38. It wasn't useful to us. We weren't doing anything with it except for moving with it. And then there's a great Wall Street Journal pinpoint graphic featuring. Man, all my life I've wanted to have a picture of me from the Wall Street Journal in this style of graphic. This cord beat me to it. Never
there's got to be somebody in the audience that knows how to do those and can make one for you.
Oh, man, I love that. Never let me go, it says, as the caption. I just thought, wow, the Wall Street Journal really knows me. But apparently I'm
you're one of many.
So good for the EU. I think this is part of what they're trying to get rid of. Look, you can see that's a micro USB cable right there. There's a mini headphone jack right there. This is what I have a lot of. These are the, and part of this is the industry that never labels those bricks. Yeah, the barrel. Yeah. They never label the bricks, so you have no idea what that goes to.
No.
Someday I'll have
that's
the discipline.
Why you keep
your best
all
bet
of it.
Is to if you can read that really tiny fine print that's silk screened on the wall wart with what the wattage is and the voltage. You know, and then, you know, hopefully you can find some device.
Yeah, but then you need the polarity. Then you need
they also have a little polarity diagram on there.
Yeah, so. And then you need to know the sun. Yeah, this is my life right there.
I have two or three old cable modems sitting around somewhere and several old routers that, you know, have been retired, including an old Linksys 54G somewhere.
Someday it'll be a collector's item.
I just feel like I know that I'm going to at some point find, for instance, and that's the other side of this equation. I have a hard drive that needs a power adapter. I, for the life of me, can't find.
Yeah.
It's not in that box. Georgia, is there? You need a video. You need an anxiety video, anxiety-videos.com for getting rid of the boxes. You could be the Marie Kondo of tech.
No, you see, I wouldn't be good at it because that's why I have a box of all of the cords and I have a box of all of keys. That, because you never know when you need to open that one thing, you have to go to this box and go through whatever 100 keys that you keep, because you never know that you're going to need to charge that little tiny cute BB-8 Sphero at some point. And what does it use? Where did you find it? Where did you place it? I would like for it all to be in Universal so I can just keep a few of them and throw everything else away. So EU, help me out in a few years.
I'm laughing right now because it reminds me, I had a Nabiztog, the little sort of Wi-Fi connected space bunny.
Yep.
I'm purging the garage.
Does that still work?
I got rid of them. What was so funny is Jim Lauterbach, my old boss at Tech TV before I started working full time on the screensavers, he and I each had a couple of them. And there's been in the last few months, there's been an open source project to put a drop in board that makes them sort of like Wi-Fi enabled and usable again in the 21st century. And I was like, oh, if I'd only held on to it for another 3 weeks.
I remember you and Robert on whatever was the Rev3 predecessor of Tech Thing or Techzilla. You always had that thing on the table there between you.
It was the weird. Oh, that was probably like DLTV, but it was such a bizarre thing. And it became, at one point, we had one running for like months in the background, and it would just occasionally chirp things and its ears would move. And it was like simultaneously the dumbest and the best thing ever. You know, it was like somebody's crazy ass art project that actually scaled and shipped. You know, it would do text messages, it would read at you, it would do email, and it would just sit there blathering in the background. And it was strangely soothing just to have it sitting back there. And then its ears would go back like an angry cat. You'd always be wondering what was going to happen next. It's what the Internet of Things should be, not poorly secured routers and weird thermal devices.
I had a weird DLTV experience a couple of days ago, believe it or not.
Oh, no.
On my Plex, I ripped a bunch of Dick Cavett Show DVDs. And for some reason, the Plex identified them all as DLTV.
I got nothing for it.
So it's fine. I know what they are, but it's like, what? Huh? But it was even a weird coincidence. Like, oh yeah, I know that guy. I love Patrick. He's no Dick Cavett, but I
would agree.
It was a very strange thing. So there was a good article in The Atlantic. This must be the kind of thing that reporters write at the beginning of a new year as they talk about boxes of cables and stuff. This is from Robinson Meyer. What the death of iTunes says about our digital habits. We started the 2010s with our obsessed with our electronic hygiene, and it ended up a nation of digital hoarders. And actually, it was early in the decade when Gmail arrived that this all began. Gmail said, stop deleting email. Stop cleaning up your email. Have unlimited space. Just put everything in there. Leave it all. Don't delete anything. Just use our great search, and you'll find the file you need. It was in counter. I bet you, Georgia, are you still an inbox zero person?
My inbox is pretty great right now, but I have to say, But I think I'm questioning this. We started out with being, I think we're hoarders by nature, period.
Anyway.
I think that we were obsessed with it because we had to.
But you remember that whole thing about Inbox Zero, where, you know, the whole idea is every day you would religiously go through every damn email you'd received and handle it in some way, delete it, archive it, assign it, respond to it. And at the end of the day, you'd sigh a great sigh of relief. And you'd tweet it too. I am Inbox Zero. And then it got so onerous that people started declaring email bankruptcy. Remember that? Where you'd say, there's no way I get to your email. So in order to get to Inbox Zero, I'm just going to delete everything. I'm not going to even look at it. And I'm going to announce to the world, I have declared email bankruptcy. If I haven't responded to you, I'm not going to send me another email. Now it's just like, I talked to somebody on the radio show today who had 93,000 emails in his inbox.
I'm looking at my Gmail inbox right now, and there's 58,000 in there. Yeah. But there's only like five or six that are unread. And actually, the thing that has been the best thing for helping me manage my inbox, you know, because you know, I don't, you know, delete most of the stuff. Most of it just stays in there, you know, but it's almost all been dealt with. But my smartphone helps me to triage that stuff. You know, on Android, you know, I can delete a message directly from the notification, so I can glance at my phone. Okay, read the subject line, who it's from, delete, and I triage a lot of stuff right from there without ever even looking at it. You know, and then you know, I come back when I've got the time. You know, if I've got a few minutes here or there, I'll go through, do a quick read. If it needs a response, I'll respond. Otherwise, you know, just leave it in there, and I don't have to mess with it.
You're just a weirdo.
Yeah,
I got to the point now where I don't even look at my email for days at a stretch.
In my job, I can't afford.
You have to do it.
I do have to respond. Yeah. You know, to stuff, but you know, I get a lot of stuff that comes in. You know, that's just, you know, meaningless, you know, ads.
All right. How about, you know, this?
Promotions for stuff.
Maybe your email. All right. How about this? Robison also says that around 2014, iTunes got so ridiculous that people stopped using it to manage their iPhones, and they just started, you know, syncing. And it was about that time that people stopped organizing their iPhones, you know, where you have the front page and then folders and stuff, and just put whatever they did. They stopped. The iPhone became 7, 8, 9 pages of apps in no possible order, and they just used the search to launch the app. Is that, Georgia, do you have an organized iPhone?
I really don't.
No.
No, I don't. I can't be bothered. Whenever my niece comes over, she organizes it for me, so I do have folders, but then I can't find anything, so I search for them anyways because I didn't organize them in the first place.
Whether it's in a folder or not doesn't matter. So. Right.
No, I don't really care.
Yeah, it's just a so we've become a nation of hoarders. He said part of the problem is that in the last 10 years, the cost of a gigabyte of hard drive space has dropped from 10 cents to 1 cent. I just bought a 16 terabyte hard drive for under $400. 16 terabytes. That's like the Library of Congress on my hard drive. And then it was so much fun, I bought a couple more. So, my NAS now has 30 terabytes of storage. I don't know. I don't ever have to throw anything out ever again. So is that what's happened? Is that we've finally relaxed into our hoarder? What makes sense?
Yeah, I think we were all in our hoarders anyways. We just couldn't.
We had this crazy notion that in the digital world, at least we could keep order. And then
we couldn't afford not to. So yeah. We were forced into it.
Yeah.
And now our true nature has just
once more emerged.
Yes.
Patrick?
I don't know. I my problem is, I think he makes a bunch of valid points in this, especially, you know, Gmail getting people used to be like, oh, just search for it and eventually you'll come up with the right set of vectors to get the thing you want. You don't have to, you know, don't just leave everything where we can search it. It'll be fine. But, you know, part of the reason iTunes died is because iTunes was always a tremendously difficult product.
It was awful. Yeah, he calls it all sorts of names in this article.
and you know, and I remember, like, you know, I remember I recently moved back to iOS after a while on Android, and I remember being like, oh, they deleted the part of iTunes that would allow me to arrange all the icons on my page.
Exactly.
Because, of course, they wanted to get rid of iTunes. And now I have to sit there and drag things and just being like, this is so irritating. But it is what it is.
He says, because of that, each of us, quote, has become a wanderer in a sea of content. Each of us adopted the tacit but still shameful assumption that we are just treading water, that the clock is always running and the work will never end. Oh, my God, that's depressing.
But so true.
But so true. The final sentence. He's talking about a famous review of a Paul Klee painting about an angel by a German critic, Walter Benjamin. This is back in 1940. The angel looked, quote, as though he's about to move away from something he's fixedly contemplating. His eyes are staring. His mouth is open. His wings are spread. The angel would like to stay and waken the dead, make whole what has been smashed, but a storm is blowing from paradise. It has got caught in his wings with such violence the angel can no longer close them. The storm irresistibly propels him into the future to which his back is turned, while the pile of debris before him grows skyward. It is now clear, writes Robison, that 80 years later the angel is looking at his iPhone.
But, I'm just watching the chat room as you talk, everybody for years, for at least a decade or more, has complained about how awful and bloated iTunes was. But think back to 2001 when it first came out. It actually was really good at first. When it was just a music organization app, it was the best thing out there. It was fantastic.
Yes.
And it wasn't until they started piling everything onto it that it got bloated.
But that in a nutshell is what's wrong with technology. It starts out simple and good, Twitter, Facebook, your iPhone, whatever, and then it bloats and grows and becomes out of control.
It's everything in
it's
life.
Entropy. It's entropy. Yeah,
exactly.
We're all headed to heat death.
There's moments that one of my favorites, one point they redesigned the interface of Gmail, but they didn't really redesign anything, but they did change all of the icons and shifted a couple of them. And, I literally had to search around until I found the spam button.
Yeah.
And then I'm looking at this and I'm like, okay, this was done. Why? It didn't.
Yeah. Because somebody had to book some hours on their timesheet.
Yeah. We've redesigned it. It's better. It's new and improved.
That's right.
We made the most important icon on your mail, mail app more difficult to use because you can't find it until you.
It's just the tech industry's version of Punch the Monkey. They're just moving it around. Okay.
In my engineering days, working on electronic control systems in cars, we had a term for this. We called it creeping featureitis.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's still, the same term, right?
Yep. It's applicable today's
a little bit, Patrick. We tech journalists are to blame because we invented PC Magazine invented the grid with the features, right? And then people would say Norton Utilities has all these, and then Symantec does this, and then with all the checkboxes, and you want the one with the most checkboxes, right? So there was this huge pressure.
On some level, I get the whole checkbox feature problem. But, admittedly, there was a lot of shovelware on a lot of different vendors' machines that had nothing to do with anybody's checkboxes and was a pure, this comes with 711 apps.
More is always better. More is always better.
Which brings us back to, the double-edged sword in human nature. Yeah. But the
we like bigger numbers. I mean, why else would AMD be releasing a 64-core Threadripper?
There is a use. There are people who saw that announcement and went, yes, because it's going to significantly reduce the amount of time it takes them to do something.
Have you and Sebastian on This Week in Computer Hardware, which is the great show you guys do on our network, have you come around the I see people going from Intel back to the AMD way. Have you come around to AMD?
I've been running an AMD Ryzen desktop since they were released.
See,
moving from my then current Intel processor to an AMD Ryzen dropped my. It was just such a massive reduction in the time it took me to render files. It was a no-brain decision.
Yep.
My one issue is, for reasons nobody can quite figure out, the USB ports on the motherboard with that Ryzen processor. Do something really peculiar to my video capture device and made the video look washed out. But in terms of, you know, editing video, computing, gaming, everything else. You know, it was a staggering amount of performance for the money compared to an Intel part.
That gap is widening, isn't it?
Well, what's going to be interesting is the big announcement. Last year was crazy. There was so much PC and especially PC gaming news at CES last year. This year, NVIDIA didn't present. Intel kind of Intel presented, but they didn't have any presence on the show floor. AMD though announced that they are Ryzen 4000 processors, and they are essentially gunning for the laptop, you know, Intel's laptop market, which is a big deal. I am really curious to see what the performance on those processors look like, and which of the manufacturers will adopt them.
When does that series come out? What was the time frame?
Not soon enough for all of us at This Week in Computer Hardware.
Very interesting. Well, you know, I'll be watching, learning about the hardware.
I'm coming to you from a Ryzen 5 as well. So
I thought you were a Ryzen guy. You just looked like it.
I was a longtime AMD guy. The very first PC I ever bought when I was still in college in the mid-1980s was an AMD 286, 12 megahertz.
Yeah.
Screaming 12 megahertz.
Well, Patrick and I really were AMD fans back in the day on Tech TV on the new screensavers because they were sticking it to Intel. And it was a good thing because that competition was what convinced Intel that perhaps the Itanium was not the direction in which to go, and they
Athlon 64.
Yeah, and they actually ended up finding a little skunkworks project they had going in Israel, and that was the genesis of what is the current Intel line of processors. But and it was thanks to AMD that those prices stayed low and the power went up, and now AMD's doing it again, which is great because they went through a kind of a fallow period.
Had a few lean years.
There's the term. Another Wall Street Journal story, Anna Maria Andreadis. Cash, plastic, or hand? Amazon envisions paying with a wave. They want to put checkout terminals in brick-and-mortar stores that allow shoppers to link their card information to their hands. It's not just a palm reader, but I guess these cameras are fast enough and accurate enough that a wave would be enough. Amazon's discussed the project with J.P. Morgan Chase & Company, Wells Fargo, Synchrony Financial, enabling consumer credit card accounts to work with hand terminals. It's interesting. They have a patent for a non-contact biometric identification system. The only problem I have with this is the same problem we talked about with face recognition and fingerprint, is you can't change your hand. You can change your credit card number easily, and if it gets compromised, no problem. You can't change your hand, your palm print. What do you do?
Plus, now you're going to be searching through all your social media. If you had any really great quality pictures of your palm, then someone else can tech up and be able to, you know, suddenly be buying Teslas on your dime.
Yeah.
Well, apparently it's pretty easy to just buy it when your phone is sitting in your pocket and not be able to get a refund.
Oh, really? Is that true?
Yeah, apparently people have been accidentally buying the full self-driving option. apparently the way the Tesla app
at 4 in the morning and instead of Bill Starling installing a wiki, they bought full self-driving.
Yeah.
I've done that. Who hasn't? let's see. SIM swapping. Did you see this CDNet article? Now, I've seen some people poo-poo this, but this was a Princeton study in which they bought prepaid mobile cards, services, testing five major U.S. providers to see if they could trick the humans at the call center into changing a user's phone number to another SIM without providing proper credentials. According to the team, AT&T, T-Mobile, TracFone, U.S. Mobile, and Verizon, I don't know where Sprint is in this, but everybody but Sprint, were found to be using vulnerable procedures with their customer support centers. For instance, and here's the flow, you call up the CSR, you say, I'm a victim, and I need a SIM swap on my account. They say, okay, what's your PIN number? You give them a PIN number, 1234. They say, no, that's not your PIN number. Oh, crud. Did I write that down wrong? I'm sorry. I must have screwed up. Okay, no problem, says the customer service representative. Can you tell me two numbers you've dialed on your phone recently? This is literally how they do that. You can provide those numbers, perhaps because, you know, you tricked somebody into dialing numbers. In some cases, they even ask you, can you tell me two inbound calls you received? That's really easy. And then they say, oh, that is you. Or billing information, a lot of stuff that isn't really that secure. And then they say, oh, that is you. Yeah, we'll swap that SIM for you, which is why you don't ever want to use an SMS for two-factor authentication. When providing incorrect answers to personal questions like date of birth or billing zip code, research assistants would explain, oh, I've been careless at sign-up. I can't recall the information. These call center operators are required, based on their procedures, to move to another mechanism. In some cases, they would ask, you'd say, what's a date of your last bill? And if you get it a little wrong, they say, no, it's you're getting warmer, no colder. They're helpful. They want to help you. The problem is they also help the bad guy. So this was not surprising to me, but just a little word of warning. It's pretty easy to do.
Because they don't want to be yelled at.
They're service. That's right. They're customer service representatives. Painful. They're trying to serve you. Right?
No, I remember the first time somebody asked me for a PIN number for my account. And I was like, never had one. Because I'd been at the company since before they'd implemented them on the same account and hadn't changed my plan. And it led to a long and, it was just odd. It just takes time. But social engineering people have a funny habit of finding a way to making this happen if they want to make your life miserable.
They do indeed. So. Patrick Norton is here. AVXL.com. That's a fabulous podcast you do with. Is that with Robert as well? Robert Herron?
Yes, sir. That is with Robert Herron.
All about audiovisual excellence.
We have fun.
I liked those 8K micro LED displays I saw at CES. Did you not think those were really beautiful and cool?
Yeah, but I have no 8K content, and there's more than enough resolution. Our eyeballs evolved for contrast, not resolution. My goal at this point, it was funny. I finally got to watch that episode of Game of Thrones, which I can never, I want to call
dark,
it the long night.
The dark episode,
And I finally got to see it on an HDR television, and I was like, okay, I was right. They really shot this with HDR in mind.
Yes.
Now I want an HDR television that it has, I want essentially an LG OLED television at this point.
Yes, you do. I will vouch for that.
On the television sides of things.
By the way, the only problem with that, I did the same thing on my HDR LG OLED. The only problem with that is the way Comcast compressed it before delivering it. Didn't matter.
It's not Comcast. It's HBO.
Somebody's compressing the hell out of that. I want the DVD of the Blu-ray now because I...
Yeah. My notes for the next episode of AVXL was talking about how frustrating it is that I've having used multiple different... I've seen across multiple different internet systems. It's HBO. They just compress the crap out of everything.
Well,
it's their prerogative, I guess.
It is, but if you're going to do that, then the directors and the producers of these programs need to know that it's not going to work. You're not going to see anything.
But they do that they do that for all their content. It was just especially brutal on that particular episode.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it?
Especially the night it shipped.
Because we were all watching live, right? The wall. Samsung had a TV that was 290 some inches. I want a wall of my house. This is why I need 8K. And this is why micro LED is a solution, because they're little tiles you put together. I want a whole wall that's a TV, because then you're there. You're immersed. You are sitting with Archie Bunker in his living room.
But I had a perfectly wonderful experience with a 100-inch projection screen in my old house. 120 would have been a nice jump for 4K, but 8K resolution when there's 8K content, call me. Until then, which I think at this point is probably...
You can't buy the TV either, unless you have $1 million lying around. So,
oh,
know.
I told Lisa, I said, that's our TV in 5 years when there's content and we have a room that's, we want to fill the whole wall.
You can sit there with your floor-to-ceiling experience.
I will have the hover chair that the Segway people
did. That they crashed bought. At.
Yeah, with your crashed
did you see the crash?
The knob fell off.
No, but my wife caught a story on that. Was like, yeah. She's like, they built the chair from Wall-E. And all I could think was like, does it come with a sesquicentennial cupcake in a cup?
I hope so.
Septuacentennial cupcake
and it's going to have the giant wall TV. And I'm just, it doesn't have, I can just.
Yep.
I can't wait. Forget can't wait your either. VR rooms. I got to have.
No, I would be all in for both.
Yep.
Then I could play VR.
Yeah.
In the chair.
Yeah.
See?
Yeah. Yeah. Now we're
perfect.
Cooking. That's
then you never have to worry about tripping over anything.
I always want to say that's sweet Georgia sure. Brown, but it's actually Georgia Dow.
Hey.
So sweet Georgia Brown, she's senior editor at iMore, but don't forget anxiety-videos.com. That's where she and her partner create the best videos on parenting, on sleep, on anxiety. Stuff that just really useful. I have the whole set, and I'm thrilled. Thank you for sending that to me. Really neat stuff, anxiety-videos.com. And, of course, Sam Abul-Samad. He is my car guy, principal analyst at Navigant Research. And he's sitting on a – is that Lake Michigan you're sitting in front of?
Grand Traverse Bay.
Grand Traverse Bay. Traverse. It's beautiful. That's where Kate Patello lives.
Yep.
She moved there, yeah, with Ray. Our show today brought to you by IT Pro TV. Man, IT would, if you're looking for a gig, if you're, you know, if you're listening to the shows here on Twitch, we know you love tech, right? Wouldn't it be nice to take your passion, the thing you love the most, and make a living doing that? And what a good living. There are millions of IT jobs lying open, just waiting for the right people to come along. Best way to get that job, get the cert you need from IT Pro TV. It's a fun and easy way to learn. IT Pro TV's edutainers blend education and entertainment to make IT learning fun. You can watch live, chat live, or on demand. And man, in every area, CompTIA, Microsoft, Cisco, Security, Linux, Apple, AWS, they have all the certs. In fact, they're the official video training partner for CompTIA. So, you know, a great cert to get into IT is one of the CompTIA certs like A+ or Network Plus or Security Plus. They have 12 on-demand courses to get you those CompTIA certs. You can take the tests before you take the test. They have practice tests, hands-on learning with their virtual labs. All you need is an HTML5 browser, and you've got access to Windows Server and desktop clients, so you can test out your skills to learn new techniques. By the way, not just Windows, also Mac OS. Everything you need to know, they've got. I am such a fan. The ISC Squared certs, the EC Council certified. Gotta take the time to get the CEH, the Certified Ethical Hacker Cert. I just would be a nice thing to frame and put on the wall. Explore all those IT career paths available to you, like entry-level systems administration, desktop support, cloud technology, and let's not forget security. There's a huge demand for IT security professionals out there. And the best way to learn right now, IT Pro TV. They even have one-on-one coaching services if you want a little hands-on support. That's available to premium members as well. Become part of the IT Pro TV family. The standard membership is very affordable, costs a lot less than a technical school, less than the materials you'd buy at a bookstore, but and that's the video-only plan. Then there's a premium membership that includes the videos, all the on-demand videos, all the live video, plus the labs, the practice tests, the one-on-one learning coach. IT Pro TV, oh, it's time. It's time. And if you're already in IT, what a great way to keep your chops up, learn new skills, get a better job or a raise. ITPro.tv/twit. Use the code TWIT30 and you'll get 30% off. And not just for a little while, but for as long as you use it, as long as you're active. TWIT30, 30% off. IT Pro TV. Build or expand your IT career and enjoy the journey. Great folks. I love them. IT Pro TV. itpro.tv/twit to find out more. I'm a little worried about Section 230. Are you worried about Section 230? Now Joe Biden is going after it. Joe did a interview with the New York Times editorial board. There's a very long, detailed transcript. In much of it, I was impressed by his command of the issues and his thoughtful, suggestions and policies. But then as you get down towards the bottom, they start talking. And boy, the bottom is a long way down. I need to scroll fast. They start talking about Facebook, Cambridge Analytica, and the problems that Facebook potentially is creating by allowing candidates to lie in political ads on Facebook. Charlie Wartzel asks, in October, your campaign sent a letter to Facebook regarding an ad that falsely claimed you blackmailed Ukrainian officials to not investigate your son. I'm curious, did that experience dealing with Facebook and their power, did that change the way you see the power of tech platforms right now? He says, Biden, I've never been a fan of Facebook, as you probably know. I've never been a big Zuckerberg fan. I think he's a real problem. He knows better. From my perspective, I'm of the view that not only should we be worrying about the concentration of power, we should worry about the lack of privacy and this is where it starts to get a little problematic for me, them being exempt. The New York Times is an exempt. You can't write something you know to be false and exempt from being sued. But he can. Mark Zuckerberg can.
But he didn't write it.
He didn't write it. And that's not what 230 is all about. 230.
Well, and the last sentence, says the discourse would be improved if we all take a moment to actually read the text of CDA 230. Well, maybe we should start with Joe Biden reading the text of 230.
Yeah, this really worries me.
He clearly doesn't understand it.
He says he's effectively saying that whatever appears on Facebook is the responsibility of Mark Zuckerberg and Facebook. They're a publisher. And Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act says online platforms aren't held liable for things their users post on them any more than the phone company is held liable for the conversation you have on the phone. That is really important to protecting the Internet. If for instance, I'm responsible for anything anybody says on our forums or in our chat room, or in a twit.social mastodon, I'm going to take them all down because I can't be held responsible for it. I'm not. It's an open forum, and it's impossible to moderate that. Imagine now multiply that times 1.5 billion users. What he's saying is, Charlie responds, that's a pretty foundational law of the modern Internet. That's right, says Biden. Exactly right, and it should be revoked. It should be revoked because it's not merely an Internet company. It's propagating falsehoods they know to be false. And we should be setting standards like the Europeans do with privacy. I hope somebody, maybe a little bit hipper, a little bit younger, maybe somebody who's read the Section 230.
He was in the Senate when that was passed.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, but unfortunately,
I understand his ire.
Don't read the bills they vote on.
I know. I understand his ire, but honestly, this is much more complex than that. He compares, he talks about the Luddites. He does say something interesting. I mean, he says, tech things happen. Technology comes along. Every industrial revolution, every major technological breakthrough, every single one. He says there's an arrogance. He said, we're in the fourth technological revolution, the hardest speech I've ever had to make. I've asked to speak at the World Economic Forum. And he says, every other revolution we've had technologically, it's taken somewhere between 6 years, this I don't disagree with, between 6 years and a generation for government to come in and level the playing field again. Remember the Luddites smashing the machinery in the Midlands? That was their answer when the culture was changing. Same thing with television, same thing before that with radio. Same thing, but this is gigantic, and it's a responsibility of government to make sure it's not abused. I don't disagree with that, but it starts by reading CDA 230 and understanding why it's so important.
Right, and I think that the answer, not that there necessarily is an answer, but to the degree there is one, is not repealing 230, but what is the real issue here? The issue is that it's trying to manage this content, trying to moderate this content, cannot possibly scale up to something the size of Facebook or YouTube or any of these other major platforms. You know, the problem is these platforms have simply gotten too big. We've allowed them to grow out of control, and there's no way that we can manage that. And, you know, I think we need to start moving away from these enormous platforms and start getting back to smaller, more constrained platforms.
That's why we have a Twit forum. Community. Yeah, that's why we do it in Twit Social.
On the other side, though, you know, if you're being paid to put up advertising that you know has libelous statements on that, shouldn't you then be able to be prosecuted for libel since you are putting that up and you've been paid for it, which would be different than having a chat room or having just Mary that posted this whatever article that Mary wanted to post?
Historically, we have not, for instance, regulated that in broadcast. Because what you don't want to do is put the broadcasters or the FCC in the position of determining what is truth and what is false. Because then there is, you know, there's issues. It's not always the case that you could say, well, no, that's a lie. And so what you don't want is government to say, okay, it's up to you, Mark Zuckerberg, to prevent lies on your platform. That actually gives him an immense amount of power. And so we don't regulate that in the United States. I don't know what they do in Canada, but in the U.S., we don't regulate that in broadcast.
You see, the only thing is that my thought is that if, you know, Citizens United and companies or people, if you can, you know, if someone else, if you put up a lie about me and I could sue you personally for libel because you wrote something that I could prove under a court of law was a lie and the court said so, then you should be able to do that the same way with a company, which may make companies more careful about what they place up and not just go to the biggest dollar.
But you see, that's the right there in the court of law. That's going to be a problem, because if you try each one of these, those trials will end in a year or two, by which time 25,000 ads have appeared in the meantime, and the election's over. So that's too slow a means. I just don't know if there's any effective
and
means.
And it's also not a guarantee that you're going to get, you know, an accurate outcome either. I mean, look at you know, the recent libel case against Elon Musk for calling that cave diver a pedo.
Yeah.
He
walked away with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. This is and in the other direction, this is a Washington Post article. There was the Congress took testimony in Boulder, Colorado this week from small companies complaining about Apple, Amazon, Facebook, and Google. Sonos, which is suing Google, saying you stole our technology, testified that, you know, there's abuse in the marketplace. Tile said, oh, man, Apple put Find My iPhone into the iPhone, largely mimicking what we do. And then in their app store said, oh, you can't collect any information, that location data. That's anti-competitive. See, this happened in Europe, too, where you get smaller companies going after Google, for instance, and using the regulators to, in effect, tilt the market in their direction. So I worry that it can go both ways. It's just difficult, isn't it? This is that double-edged sword. I knew this would be the theme for today. we are going to see there. The Supreme Court has agreed to take the Apple Store case, so that will be very interesting. You know what? I've kept you here long enough. I think it's time to, on that note, to say thank you. Patrick is in an unknown location.
I'm in Salt Lake City.
Really?
It's not that unknown.
Is that where you're going to move? Are you moving there? No. Or are you just visiting?
We are traveling through here on our way to Rapid City, and then we are swinging back around. We could end up in St. Louis.
So you don't have a destination.
We are exploring and figuring out where we move next.
You're a family on the move. Are you all stuck in an RV? What's going on?
Well, we were stuck in an Airstream, and now we are stuck in a somewhat larger and somewhat warmer Creekside, which is an outdoors RV, four-season trailer.
What happened to the Airstream? Trailer.
It's, you know, it turns out when you take, two adults, a 7-year-old, a 12-year-old, and a husky, suddenly an Airstream, you know, 76 Airstream Sovereign seems so much smaller than it did.
But it's so cute, isn't it?
It is aesthetically, It is a design icon. It is a magnificently constructed beast. It is too damn small for my relationship with my wife and my children and the dog to survive all of us in there in cold weather.
I had no idea you were doing this, Patrick. How long has this hegira been going on?
Let's just say a couple months and leave it at that.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Patrick. So. Patrick. Patrick.
Leo.
Patrick. He's
Leo.
I always thought you carried your life in your backpack, but this is ridiculous.
Well, I do feel like a snail with a rather large shell
now. Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. Well, it's great. Are you in it now? Is that it right now that you're in?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm in the slide out in the corner at the table, hence the magnificent look. We found the guy who designed all the Motel 6s in 1985, which apparently is how they design RV interiors.
Where'd you put the kids, the husky, and Sarah?
Sarah's actually sitting across the table from me. The children are hit in their bunks right now.
Hi, Sarah.
Or the dog ate
the children.
They're
so quiet.
They're so nice.
Your kids are so good.
Oh, don't worry. That'll change.
Well, Patrick, I love you, man. I miss
they
you.
Did great.
I hope you find a home somewhere out there. But it sounds like a really great, actually kind of a fun experience. I imagine by the time the kids have to go to school or something, you're going to, I don't know what you're doing.
We'll be homeschooled. We've been homeschooling the kids.
Well, Sarah's a very smart person. So, and you could teach the kids how to solder.
You know, we factually refer to the name of our school is the North Island School of Poetry and Power Tools.
Exactly right. Thank you, Patrick.
The kids need to be able to write an essay. They got to be able to do math. They have to understand history. And it would be nice if they could operate wrenches and various and sundry other things.
You're getting a better education than I did. That's awesome. AVExcel.com for Patrick's podcast. And, of course, every week with Sebastian Peak on This Week in Computer Hardware. Thank you, Patrick. Great to see you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks to Sam Abul-Samad. He's my car guy. And he's also apparently Navigant Research's car guy. He's principal analyst there. Also a great podcast, Wheel Bearings at wheelbearings.media. And I hope you're enjoying the beautiful warm weather in Detroit right now.
Yeah, I would if we actually had some, but I had to really bundle up to take Daisy for a walk today. So.
Oh, man. Great to see you. I'll see you next week on the Tech Guy Show.
Yep, and I'm actually heading out to San Francisco tomorrow.
To drive something fun?
Cruise Automation, the company that GM owns is developing their autonomous driving system, is having an event on Tuesday.
To self-drive
and they're gonna be making
something
some announcements.
Fun.
Cool. Yeah, maybe just go for a ride in something.
Thank you also for your great assistance at CES. We really saw some fun things with you, including my next vehicle, I think, the Mustang Mach-E. That was a lot of fun to get that tour.
That was fun doing that with you and Ann.
That was really cool, yeah. Thank you, Georgia Dow. I miss you. I hope everything's going well in Montreal now that you've relocated.
Yes.
Senior editor at iMore. Owner of four, count them, four VR rooms, soon to have a wall-sized TV, anxiety-videos.com. Anything else you want to mention?
No, that's about it.
Come back soon. Great to see you. I have a football game to watch, so I'm putting on my hard hat. If you didn't watch the video today, you missed. I look like a padded gold lamé construction worker. I think is
at the beginning of the video you looked like you were a wrestler.
I could do both. That would be a very strange combination, but it's possible. We do this show every Sunday afternoon around 2:30 Pacific, 5:30 Eastern. That's 22:30 UTC. Oh, that is a weird combination.
You're the newest member of the Village People.
I don't know what the hell that is. It looks like something out of a Stephen King nightmare. If you want to watch live, twit, or listen live, twit.tv/live. You can also join us in the studio like Pete did. All you have to do is email tickets at twit.tv. We'll put a seat out for you. And, of course, on-demand versions of all of our shows available at our website, twit.tv or YouTube. Or, best thing to do, subscribe in your favorite podcast application. That way you'll get the show the minute it's available in plenty of time for your Monday morning commute. Thanks, everybody. It's been great. We'll see you next time. Another twit. is in the can. Ah! You scared me.